Today's episode, Ohio State-Michigan rivalry still flaring up. Could the Big Ten be on a path of championship dominance? It's UCLA having second thoughts after its calamony. And yeah, we talked Toledo recruiting.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Guar gum. Polysorbit 80.
Ross Dellinger.
Two parts, Aster, Risk.
And SI's Pat 40.
Cal got the house. Cal might even have gotten the vacation home. Cal got the better car. I mean, they cleaned up at this calamity.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And it is the middle of May, but the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry never sleeps. Gene Smith, outgoing Ohio State athletic director, was on a podcast recently, and he was asked, I think it was a podcast, some interview, was asked whether he thought, kind of a loaded question, but, you know, whatever, should Michigan's three victories in the last 3 years over Ohio State have an asterisk on it attached because of the work of young Connor Stallions and his advanced scouting operation?
Kind of a loaded question. Pretty loaded.
Yeah, of course I do, Smith said. I mean, he's the outgoing athletic director at Ohio State. Of course I do. The rules are in place to protect the integrity of the game and try your best to create a level playing field. When those rules are violated, it affects those principles. We have to keep that in perspective. So, Gene Smith, who we often speak admirably here, big-time athletic director, on his way out the door, throwing the old asterisk card down. I present it to you. Then after this topic, I'm going to try to bring everyone back together. This is really good work for me because it's Mother's Day. Everyone's supposed to be happy on Mother's Day. But start with you, Pat. Does Gene Smith know what he's talking about here?
This is the rivalry, right? Somebody offers you a chance to besmirch your rival, to undercut their achievements at your expense. You take it. And he did. And yeah, he's the one going out, and it's Ross Bjork that has to go sit in the press box next year with Ward Manuel. So this is Gene riding out of town with guns blazing, I guess. You might be able to make an argument that he has a case for 2021 and 2022. I don't see how he has any case for 2023. You know, Connor Stallions was out of business, basically, by the time they got around to playing each other this past year. And maybe he had stolen signals earlier, but for the love of God, we know Ohio State had changed their signals by then. Now, the other two games, and, you know, we saw that video from the 22 game where, you know, Stallions appeared to be getting signals and relaying them to Jesse Minter and relaying them the whole sidelines erupting, you know, with various signaling and gesticulating. So were they getting an advantage then? Yeah, they very well might have been. I don't know whether you can put an asterisk on it yet. There is still an ongoing investigation by the NCAA if the NCAA does still do investigations, and we think they do, at least in this case. This isn't an impermissible benefits that no longer applies. This isn't something that the attorneys general were able to wipe off the books, to the best of my knowledge. So this is maybe the last interesting NCAA infractions case, and we don't know where it stands, but when we see where it stands, we might have a little more indication whether Gene Smith's got an argument here.
The old asterisk was a storyline I wrote about. Well, leading into the championship, I remember going around interviewing some administrators within the industry to kind of gather some comments on what they thought specifically about the asterisk if Michigan had won. And then when they won, Ward Manuel, the Michigan athletic director, I remember being down in the field, confetti raining down, players celebrating all around him. And I asked him about the asterisk that many of his fellow administrators believe should be on Michigan's championship and perhaps on other games, as Gene Smith noted. He responded with two words. Hell nah was the two-word response. He went on to say, why? I don't know why. They proved it on the field. Why would somebody want to say now that there's some asterisk? Ridiculous. This team has proven they're a champion, period. End of story. There ain't no asterisk. So pretty aggressive there, obviously. Pretty honest on the field after the game. We weren't specifically speaking about the Ohio State series. We were talking a little bit more about the national championship game, but certainly, or the championship in general, but certainly the Ohio State games contributed through the years in that championship. And it's going to be one of those things that go down in history. And maybe it's dependent on the finalization of the NCAA's investigation, which, you know, maybe weeks or months still away. But this is going to be a point argued by college sports fans and those within the industry, I think, for quite some time.
That was not, it offered no ruling there. I heard no ruling. That's okay.
I don't know how to rule on this.
It seems we have a difference of opinion between the Michigan AD and the Ohio State AD. I can't believe it.
I know. Shocking.
Okay.
2021 and 2022, yes, no. Asterisk. 23, so no. Bad.
No asterisk ever. Yeah. I hate the asterisk. You know what? You know what I hate about this word?
You wanted an opinion, then all of a sudden it's a bad sucks. Opinion.
This, okay. words, this word, for someone who cannot pronounce any words in the English language, asterisk is a landmine. It is a landmine. I am terrified of saying this word. I don't know what's... Yeah, asterisk. Something bad is going to come out after I get through the ass part. Okay, look, I don't know how
Dan,
to
aster, two parts aster risk
aster risk. Okay, whatever. I hate them to begin with. I hate the vacated, take the banners down, all this stuff like it didn't happen. Okay, so blatant. Just that's my baseline. I can't stand this stuff to begin with. It either happened or it didn't happen. You either caught him or not. You go back through, because if you want to start going down, they missed this pass interference. They missed this holding call. You're never, ever going to get to the end of this thing. They play the game. The game ends. This is Ohio State, Michigan. They had a 10-year period, a decade-long period between Woody Hayes and Bo Schembechler that is affectionately called on both sides of the rivalry the 10-year war. They had a literal war between these two states for Toledo. They fought.
Congrats to Ohio for winning that one.
Congrats to Michigan for not getting Toledo, some would say. Dave Briggs is going to kill me on that. It's a Toledo joke.
We have Toledo listeners joke. In Toledo. We love you.
We love Toledo. It's okay.
You know, Toledo has, like, their Toledo Mudhens are, like, outdrawing like a number of major league baseball teams. Like, they have so much passion about sports in Toledo. It's crazy. And they sell out all their minor league hockey games. Like, they have better fans than Phoenix.
Hey, the Rocket. I mean, Toledo has the most consistent, probably over the last decade, group of
football
five program.
And basketball. No, I love Toledo. But it had to be. Sorry, I stooped and told a Toledo joke. But anyway, who did really win the Toledo War? Anyway, they had Urban Meyer. This is blood sport. They do everything to compete against each other. Do they push the lines? Did Connor Stallions seemingly break the rules? Absolutely. Okay, not even to question, but to question all of it. if Ryan Day was going into the 12th game of the season, because you can steal the signs, we know, totally allowed to steal the signs off of TV, steal the signs off a coaching video, steal the signs from your friends on the other teams that just played them and sent you what they figured out during their advanced scouting. If an Ohio State coach goes into the final game, or Michigan coach, with the exact same signals they had all 11 previous weeks after having countdown clocks and refusing to call, I call them Ohio. I don't say Ohio State. That team up north, we're going to patch out all the M's in Columbus with the little pieces of tape so there's no M. If you're so obsessed with that stuff, you can't wear blue. NFL GM could show up to scout your players, and if he's wearing a blue shirt, he has to get thrown out of the thing. And you are going in with the same signals? It's like you're not allowed to get mugged, right? But if you walk down a dark alley waving $100 bills around, I'm just saying.
Asking for it, Dan?
I'm just saying. There's no asterisk in this. Calling, Gene Smith knows that I have great admiration for him. Calling for an asterisk on this is weak sauce. Just come back and beat him. It is weak sauce. It is the same thing as declaring your team as tough as can be because you beat Notre Dame and 10 guys in September. Ohio State wants to settle this. They settle it by beating Michigan head up. This is weak with the asterisk talk. It'll probably go on forever. It's going to make my head hurt forever. These are the games. Connor Stallions was doing, yes, there was the video. Oh, he knew the plays, he knew the plays. How do you know when he got that?
When he got the play.
Maybe they stole it this way. Maybe they stole it that way. Everyone had each other's signs. It's just part of the game. You can't be crying. Last November, they got rid of Harbaugh as a punishment. The Big Ten came in and said we need to even this out. It's like in hockey, you trip the guy, say 2 minutes, you're down a guy, 5-on-4 power play, or we'll give you a breakaway. We'll give you a penalty shot even. The Big Ten came and said, we're going to even this out. Not only is Connor long gone, Harbaugh's gone. You have to coach against Sherrone Moore. There's no asterisk on that. I implore the Ohio State people to think. You don't want to go down this road where you're crying about asterisks. That's embarrassing. Waving asterisks.
21-22.
You're going to look. It's embarrassing.
I don't know.
Well, there's going to be an asterisk at some point literally in the record books because the NCAA is going to rule. So it's going to – the investigation is going to upturn something that impacts those seasons. And it's going to – there's going to literally be a little
that's the NCAA's weak Dan. Bit. It's like, okay, they took away Louisville's national championship in the 2013 basketball season.
I know. The vacated wins sit there, is laughable.
I don't know who they beat, but let's say they – I'm not remembering the record, but let's say they beat – like, is Mike Krzyzewski go, oh, we deserve a victory for that like game they beat us in? Like, that would – you'd be like, shut up, Kay. You got enough victories. Maybe they defeated Kentucky that year. If John Calipari was out going, they cheated. Obviously, they didn't. You'd be like, shut up, Cal.
That those victories were vacated for paying players, as opposed to actual something on the field competitive advantage
if you have a professional sickness. Athlete playing against amateurs, per the NCAA's rules.
Yeah,
that's what they. That's why they do it. The asterisk is an embarrassing call for Ohio State. I get it. Be bitter, but you didn't lose in November was when you needed to shut them up. And they didn't.
But Gene Smith's done, baby. He can be bitter all he wants on the way out the door.
Not a good look for Gene Smith.
Tossing grenades out the window on the exit.
I will mock this call forever. Not because Michigan's innocent, because they aren't, but because everybody's guilty. This was not the determining factor. Was it the play call that encouraged Ohio State to stack 10 guys on the line and let Donovan Edwards run by him twice? Was that the play? Was that some? Was that?
I think
it?
So.
Was
yes. That... Connor Stallions. Connor Stallions reached into Jim Knowles's brain and told him to run an absolutely ridiculous defense on multiple occasions.
40-yard plus touchdowns in that game because Jim Knowles called an awful game. The he same sure way did. Back in 18 we and 19, there. Michigan's defense with Don Brown was completely ill-prepared. They say that Ohio State stole our signs. They knew we were. They just ran these crossing routes. Well, that's your own damn fault. And Ohio State torched you for 60 points and stuff like that. Get your own Connor Stallions.
I think Pat's right. I think Connor has mythical powers.
Good Lord.
See?
He made Aiden Hutchinson minds. Good. He made Ojabu good. Hassan Haskins. He got 13 guys drafted. This dude. We got to get him back into college football. I'm hiring him.
It's the most important person in the history of college football.
Ohio State's roster, you got to look. I mean, you look at this thing. It is absolutely loaded. We talked about, are they number one or number two? Do you like them over Will? Do you like them over Georgia or not? Maybe it's down to whether you like Will Howard or not. I don't know. But we have a new system in college football, and it is NIL. It is the transfer portal. And the Big Ten schools will tell you for a long time, even the Ohio State ones, that the SEC was paying players for all these years. And, these good, upstanding Midwesterners, they're the extent of their cheating was sending their college buddies to games with cell phones, but never anything else. So, along those lines. But that will be the one way you can unite these fan bases. But we have a new system here in college sports, and we're seeing how it plays out. And last year, the University of Michigan won the national championship. And it was their first national championship for the Big Ten since the 2014 season when Ohio State won it in the new playoff. And at the time, people were like, hey, maybe with this new playoff, remember, Ohio State kind of snuck in. Maybe with this new playoff, the Northern teams, the Big Ten basically teams, will have a better chance to win national championships. There was that sentiment back in the winter of 2015 after Ohio State beat Alabama and then beat Oregon to win the first college football playoff. Maybe this is it's a reset, and maybe the Southern dominance of the sport will end. From that point on, no. The Southern schools won every single national championship and mostly played each other for it. The only other team, the one time Ohio State returned to the national championship and got beat 52-24 by Alabama. That was after the 2020 season. It was Alabama-Clemson. It was Clemson-Alabama. It was Alabama-Georgia. It was Clemson-Alabama. It was LSU-Clemson. It was the Alabama-Ohio State, Georgia-Alabama, Georgia-TCU. And then finally, there's this breakthrough. And we have this new system where Michigan spends all this money to keep their guys around. They get Blake Corum to come back, Cornelius Johnson, Zach Zinner, all these guys. They got NIL. They're using the transfer portal to fill gaps. All of a sudden, Michigan's in business. They win the national championship. First team other than Ohio State in a long, long time. And now Ohio State's coming in, following the Michigan blueprint, and they are loaded. And we got this expanded playoff. And what if Ohio State wins the national championship? What if this is actually the change that people thought, hey, maybe this four-team playoff will change things? It did not. It accentuated Southern. What if this is the change? That Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Notre Dame, some of these schools that for years really couldn't compete on national level, Ohio State a little bit. The other ones were not capable of going against them. What if Ohio State wins the national championship this year? And all of a sudden, the Big Ten, not just one fluke year with Michigan, but all of a sudden, the Big Ten are the big dogs. And the SEC and the Southern schools, who did not have a team in the title game last year, have to sit there and go, wait a minute. Do I have to call the Paul Feinbaum show? What is going on? What if the Southern, I just listed off those title games. What if we got a new system here where the Big Ten schools, notably Michigan and Ohio State, would a Michigan fan be excited for that?
Come on, Dan.
They're not going to chant SEC.
It's an interesting
SEC.
Premise.
They're not gonna chant SEC. I'm not saying that.
No,
but the idea.
No. But it's an interesting
that the
premise.
North,
it is.
The Big Ten could win two consecutive national championships, and all of a sudden, it is a new era because they got a lot of money and a lot of. I'm not going to be the one that says no one ever paid for a recruit up north, but if we're going to start paying, guess who's got a lot of money? Pat, your thoughts on my thesis? It's probably not well laid out.
I like it. No, I mean, we'll see. But there's no doubt that Ohio State specifically this year, I think, went as whole hog aggressive, buy ourselves a roster as anybody ever has in college football that we know of that we can prove because
it's
out
there.
Well,
it's the Nevin
Shapiro
Hurricanes now. Let's a moment of silence and respect.
There was that.
For my man Nevin, okay.
For yes, NIL Nevin
yes,
image
that's
and
what
likeness.
He calls himself.
Yes.
Nevin image and likeness.
Oh
now.
Yeah. Yes, yes. But no, look, they went out, they paid their guys to stay in school, then they paid a bunch of other guys to come into Ohio State. And you go get Caleb Downs, who was a star at Alabama, and you go get a quarterback and you get a bunch of other guys. I mean, they went big time. So if this works, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of schools that have a lot of money, but I don't know whether there is a bigger fan base than Ohio State's. And they're crazy motivated. They've just watched Michigan rub their face in it 3 years in a row and win a title. And we've said it 1,000 times. Nothing will motivate your school more than watching your rival get over. And they have. So, yes, do these two schools now continue to kind of escalate things amongst themselves? Is it possible they have deeper pockets than Georgia and Alabama and LSU and other schools down south? Maybe. I don't know. But that might also be the thing that motivates all of a sudden Alabama boosters. Like, wait a minute. All right, we got to get serious about this. Or Georgia or whoever. You know, they're already pretty damn serious, but maybe there's another level of a booster commitment they could get to that changes the equation there. You know, there's so many other factors that could be involved here, guys, just based on what is in-house NIL look like and payments there, and does that change things? But if that comes to pass, but I think it's an interesting premise that, yes, maybe the Big Ten is positioned to flat out money whip its way back to prominence.
You know, it's an interesting point if we're seeing a shift. You know, a year or two is obviously a small sample size, but in this new, maybe this potential new model too going forward is probably a part of this conversation where schools are, you know, if this settlement and everything comes to finalization, or schools will be able to directly pay athletes and distribute revenues, and you look at who's got the most revenues, right? And Ohio State is normally up there, number one or number two, at worst, number three, behind Texas and in A&M. So you look at that, those programs up there, and it's pretty easy to tell, you know, who has an advantage going forward in a world where you can pay directly, and not only that, right? I mean, we said it as we've been talking about this stuff now, this new model and stuff for a couple of weeks, but you know, you won't only have direct pay from schools, but you'll probably still have collectives and third parties outside of the university still participating, you might say, in this compensation. And man, what better way than being in Columbus, Ohio, in doing that. So it is, I think Dan brings up a good point of, you know, the population centers and the advantage that the Big Ten has there, and just overall resources should certainly be interesting to watch going forward.
I say all this, and The number one recruit in the class of 2025 hails from Belleville, Michigan, quarterback Bryce Underwood, and he's headed to LSU. So Michigan and Ohio State couldn't quite keep him, but it might be a factor. But Ohio State's certainly getting just about everybody else they want right now. I just think that there's the fundamental shift and the idea that what Michigan showed was, let me put it this way. Until this year, did you ever think Michigan was going to win a did you think Michigan was capable of winning a national title in the next 10, 15 years?
No. I mean, the way Georgia throttled them in 21, and then you lose to a TCU team that gets throttled by Georgia, I thought there was still a gap there, and they closed.
You used to have to be able to rack up top five recruiting classes over and over and over and over and over. And to do that, it helps dramatically to be close to that talent. And as much as there is talent in Ohio and talent in Michigan, I think Detroit, Michigan had more. I know Detroit, Michigan had more NFL players last year than any other city in the country. There isn't the level of talent that there is in Georgia, Florida, Texas, and even many, many years, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. Tennessee's come along, particularly in the middle of the state, as a producing a lot more talent, you know. So South Carolina, I mean, there's just so much talent in the South. So if you aren't in those states, you're fighting on someone else's turf. You're trying to get a Southern kid to come North. That's harder than keeping. But when you get off of this bit where you had to just keep landing, because that Harbaugh was never going to land those kind of guys. But at the end of the day, if he can get a whole bunch of good ones and he can fill gaps with the scouting and picking up the right transfer. I just think it's a different era, and in Michigan maybe isn't the only one. Ohio State is clearly following some of that path. It's not like this was innovative. Hey, let's keep our best players. Pretty simple concept, but they didn't have to go Connor Stallions to say, hey, this is a good idea. They could see it. What would the reaction be in the SEC if it's a second straight year of a Big Ten hypothetically winning the championship? I mean, they are so trained to be the best because they have been the best. It's not even been close. It's been utter dominance for so long. And yeah, Clemson wins a couple, but they're kind of SEC, and they got Trevor Lawrence. Tennessee was really rolling, as they should have been during those years with Clemson. It's like Clemson stole Tennessee's program for a while there. Could you get that go? But Clemson, okay, they're ACC, but we understand, right? But if all of a sudden the Northern teams are doing it to you, what would the reaction be?
More bags, Dan. Bigger bags and more of them, maybe.
They can't win the money. They can, but like some of these schools, I don't know.
Don't put it back. Well, what did I just say? Right, two of the top
Texas
three
schools are maybe a little different
in
but
revenue, right? Yeah, Texas and A&M are gonna outspend pretty much everybody except maybe Ohio State. One thing to put some numbers behind something you mentioned, I believe. And this is like an average, but and they're kind of rough numbers, but about two thirds of the 4- and 5-star prospects, high school football prospects, come from the 12-state SEC footprint. Two thirds. So one third of the 4- and 5-stars are from the other 38 states. So yeah, it's a little easier when they're in your backyard.
And I will say, they, you know, the just means more thing, while it gets mocked plenty, there is truth to it, because it does mean more. And when it means more, then by golly, you're willing to give up a bigger percentage of your money that you own to make sure you win than probably maybe people to where it means less, a little less. So they may not have as many rich folks necessarily in the South, but they might be more avidly willing to part with their cash if all of a sudden you're watching those no-good bastards from Ohio and Michigan beat you for national titles. I mean, there really is it is fascinating to me. And Ross, I mean, you've lived it more than Dan or I have, but there really is an actual SEC pride, even though the schools hate each other and go after each other viciously. But it does actually exist. I find that fascinating, and I always have.
It certainly does. The culture down there, and it feeds into all that. Just means more, you know, it, Dan. If the Tide, you know, if the Tide needs a quarterback, then maybe it's time to take out a second mortgage for old Bobby.
Exactly.
You know, if the Tigers need a left guard, Dan, John Boy down in Thibodeau, he going to, you know, maybe he had to sell his truck, you know? So,
I mean, you got to drain the 401k. College fund? Sure, yeah. What are we doing? You what know? Are we doing here?
Yeah.
Who knows? Yeah. College ads, a waste of money. I think that's I think that's Dave Ramsey's advice, right? I mean, he's got that he's a Tennessee fan. I think he would go along with everybody. If we got to buy a linebacker, we got to buy a linebacker. Cannot let the Big Ten start winning this thing, start getting all uppity, start thinking they can do this every year. Harbaugh's gone. Threat averted. We cannot allow the Buckeyes to win.
See? If you're a lawyer in Bessemer and you're sending your kid to school, you may have to sit the kid down and say, you know what, Susie, we might have to do a couple years of trade school, but technical school, before you're allowed to go to Auburn, because we gotta get us a linebacker.
World needs ditch diggers too, Danny.
That's right.
Also, you know, we're already hearing this. Okay, last week we had Brian Kelly talking about bidding wars. That's not how we want to do it necessarily. Hugh Freeze, Auburn's Hugh Freeze. So you think about sticking it, you know, very straight and narrow. You think Auburn and you think Hugh Freeze. These are the people you think about.
Pat is chuckling who you think over about. There. I wonder why.
I don't feel comfortable with some of the bidding wars for some of the top guys in the portal. Freeze told on three. I think he told. Who did he tell? Told somebody. I can't tell if things are aggregated or not. No, he said it on McElroy and Kublik.
A lot of aggregation these days, Dan. Don't get me started on that again.
God knows if he even said it. This is on three. I just don't feel comfortable with some of the bidding wars for some of the top guys. Not that we're not very fair. It's just I want to build the whole roster and try to do it with guys that fit somewhat your culture. I believe this is admirable. But this is what Notre Dame and like Michigan used to say.
Yeah.
Ain't saying it anymore. Like, wait, we can pay them?
No. We don't have to pretend like we're not paying them. Okay. But Hugh Freeze, I mean, come on. Come on now.
Well, I think both Brian Kelly and Hugh are probably, though they won't say it exactly, they're probably speaking to the, I would guess, more so the amounts that's going on, right? As we discussed after Brian Kelly's contract. Well, I mean, you only have so much money in the old fund, the old NIL fund, Dan.
What are we doing?
It's not their money, so they're not getting enough money from the collective.
Well, they're out of money.
Yeah.
They're not out of money in Columbus. I'm just saying. I will say this, though. I do not think Michigan fan will ever chant Big Ten when Ohio State wins. And I don't think Ohio State fan was chanting Big Ten when Michigan won. They're talking about asterisks and stuff like that.
Maybe if, you know, a slightly less triggering school like Penn State or Wisconsin would win a national title. Maybe you'd get a Big Ten chant then.
Yeah, I think I could see probably that. Not. They could rally around. Like they probably were all rooting for Purdue to win the basketball title, right? Like, can you really hate Purdue? I mean, Indiana.
You
know, I don't.
Well, you and your drum and your West
alive,
Lafayette.
But West Lafayette is a beautiful little city.
Okay. Come around that far.
We'll be back right after this. All right. Speaking of bitterness, it's calamony time. You've heard of alimony. That doesn't sound fun. Calamony sounds pretty not fun, too. As we know, UCLA left the Pac-12 to join the Big Ten. And because of that, the Pac-12 fell apart. And the University of California, Cal, had a another public school in the UC system. It's University of Cal Berkeley. It's University of California, Los Angeles, right? Same system. They have the same Board of Regents. And so it's two of their campuses fighting here, splitting up. So Cal had to join the ACC, which is going to cost the it's totally illogical. That water around the Bay Area is not the Atlantic. Other than that, there's many problems with it. But part of the deal of recommending and allowing UCLA to join the Big Ten was they would have to pay some money to some alimony, if you will, for the divorce and fund Cal Berkeley. Well, the California Board of Regents is expected this week to accept the recommendation that UCLA pay Cal $10 million a year over 6 years. That's some pretty good money for a divorce. $10 million per year. So $60 million. UCLA, not surprisingly, was trying to get much lower. But this is expected to go through, which takes a little of the shine off of UCLA's move to the Big Ten, and at least temporarily helps Cal Berkeley for a little while. It's expected the Big Ten media deal is going to be like $50 million more than from the ACC, what Cal's going to get from the ACC, all of that stuff. But thoughts on calimony, Pat, and does this I don't know, what does this mean for UCLA?
Yeah, in this divorce, Cal got the house. Cal might even have gotten the vacation home. Cal got the better car. I mean, they cleaned up in this calimony. And I love it. I think it's great. I have no love lost for the schools that destabilized and ultimately destroyed the Pac-12. I want everything to go in favor of the schools that tried to stay, like Cal and Stanford did until they had to go, basically. I've said all along, I want Washington State and Oregon State to get every dime they can get out of what's left of the Pac-12. So I'm fine with it. You know what? You can't just do your own thing in a university system and just expect everybody to say, oh, all right, go ahead. You know, there's still some thin connective tissue somewhere in colleges from one school to another where you can't just screw over the other school all the time and get away with it. So I'm totally fine with this, and I hope Cal puts the money to good use. Lord knows they need it. They're swimming in debt, and they've forfeited, along with Stanford and SMU, like most of their money going into the ACC. So they need to put it to good use for sure to get up and running in that league. Provided that league actually still exists in a couple of years. But I am fine with calimony, and I'm glad they're getting the max.
I was trying to find like Cal's financial situation as Pat was talking, but I think at one point they were in debt more than any other like athletic department in the country. I think they were more in debt or owed more debt than any other program. I can't remember exactly the specifics, but this is when you really crunch the numbers. And John Wilner, our guy out in the West Coast, he crunched the numbers a little bit last week on this. I think they're kind of fascinating. Is when you combine the $10 million that UCLA will have to pay Cal with around $10 to $12 million in increase of UCLA's travel costs, and then maybe salaries going up to compete in the Big Ten, coaching salaries, things like that. You're left with what he says is about $45 million average in from the Big Ten media rights. And you know, had the Pac-12 stayed together, the amount was you know, with the LA schools, would have probably been in the mid 30s to 40 million. So you're talking about the net, right, of those two things being fairly small, probably smaller than UCLA thought when it made the decision to leave. And that's really interesting. Now, I know that's just for 6 years. And then the folks at UCLA will say, and I think they're right in this, this was a more long-term play for beyond 6 years. And I get that, especially as we're talking about all this house settlement and the new model. Like, that's true, right? Getting a foothold in the in one of the big two power two leagues. But nevertheless, for the next 6 years, their net on this move to the Big Ten probably you know, may have started at 25 million, and now is down to probably less than 10.
Do you guys think this is going to work for UCLA? You think this is going to work? Big Ten. Maybe they had to go because USC wanted to go, but.
Work as in, how would you define work? Winning championships?
Successful, having a successful athletic department. Mm. Certainly in football and men's basketball.
Yeah, that. Yeah, I effectively didn't answer actually the question that you asked, which was, what does this mean for UCLA? So we'll try to answer it now. I don't know. I have severe doubts it'll work. You know, they did, I think, kind of get dragged along in USC's jet stream into this. They were facing their own financial crisis and felt like they needed to find a way to get money that they had not been getting. So, you know, I think if you ask them, it's like, well, we had to. But is anybody A, that enthusiastic about it? B, are they good enough? Right now, no, they're not good enough. I mean, like, football, they could absolutely get smoked for a while here. Maybe they get it together, but we've only been saying that about UCLA for most of its existence. Other sports, they could do very well, but they also could be jeopardizing some elite non-revenue sports. Basketball, this is going to be a tough thing for basketball. There's going to be a lot of difficult midweek travel. They have an excellent coach in Mick Cronin who got them to a Final Four. They're really good in women's hoops. They're good in a lot of stuff, but you're taking on more difficulty, not just in terms of competitiveness, but in terms of logistics and probably in terms of academics and in terms of athlete mental health, and your fans probably aren't going to enjoy it as much. So my guess is no, it's not going to work, but we'll see. Maybe they'll surprise us.
Is it going to work for any of these programs that are making these realignment moves? I mean, you look at them, you know, and I mean, you just kind of wonder, but specifically UCLA and even Oklahoma stand out to me as two programs that may struggle in the new environment. But you wonder when you look at Oregon and Washington, in USC for that matter, and in Utah, competing in the Pac-12, in the competition in the Pac-12, compared to the competition in their new league, specifically to the Washington, Oregon, and in the LA schools, like, they seem to have a better right path in the Pac-12. It's pretty obvious. Texas and Oklahoma, they seem to have a better path in the Big 12 than they will in the SEC. But it's almost like anymore, it's not about having a better path. It's not as much about championships. It is about money. It's become a money business, and it's about money. I was talking to Bob Bowlesby, former Big 12 commissioner, recently. Actually, he gave me a kind of a quote about all this, exactly what we're talking about. I'll read it. You have one winner and you have one loser. You take the aggregate of the Big Ten, who have been traditional winners, and some are going to have to lose. There'll be a top, middle, and a bottom. With realignment, you're aggregating a bunch of schools that traditionally have been at the top. Remains to be seen how it all will play out, but some of the traditional winners will become traditional losers.
Absolutely. That's why I didn't understand why a lot of the schools in the Big Ten wanted this. In the middle, And then I don't know. For years we talk about this. It's like we had to do it. Ohio State is shooting money cannons around. And UCLA is like, oh man, I got to pay my ex. I get this. I can't get a new car.
That's true. How does that impact? I mean, Dan, that's a great point. This $20 million revenue cap potentially coming to college athletics.
It's going to be a hell of a lot higher.
It's
$10
million. It's going to Cal. Yeah, Cal just got $10 million of that. There you go. UCLA's paying half of Cal's athletes in revenue share. How about this wonderful industry that we're covering, huh? Just going real smooth here.
Groupon to like the movies, and the X is like posting pictures from Cayman Islands with the new. I mean, no, it's not going to be that good for Cal. We have to do it. We have to do it, right? Boston College had to do it, had to join the ACC. Look at all this money we're going to get. Boston College hasn't been good in anything other than hockey and women's lacrosse since. And it ain't good. It sucks for the fans. They don't have fans anymore. They never fill their stadiums. Nebraska had to do it, had to do it, had to do it. Never really been as good, you know? I just look at these deals, but to me, UCLA is the one that really stands out. Is how are you going to make this work? How is this going to be? I mean, this is a phenomenal institution, and they do have some fans and all that, but it's like, now you take this. First 6 years were the stumble. Like Rutgers did that half payment thing. They're still trying to get up to speed. I don't know. They're the one that I risk. And you can sit around and show me your flow charts and how rich you are. But I point to Boston College. You stopped mattering at all. And you haven't been any really good. And like your last coach just left to be an NFL assistant. Like you can't, how's this going to work? The exciting days of just beating Providence, right? Just beating Oregon State. Those were exciting. Hey, we're going to win our league. We got a big, big rivalry with Arizona basketball going. That was enough. Now, what are we doing? I don't know.
Yeah. I'm sure people be super chasing fired money. Up.
For who?
Yeah. People be super fired up for that Minnesota UCLA basketball game.
Money for who?
It's going to be huge.
Money to balance the books.
Well, they would say money to pay the athletes directly.
That. They didn't make that move when there was a thing.
Yeah, 2021 when all this started going on. Yeah, there was no pay.
I don't know what they were doing. Yeah. One more thing. Interesting story in recruiting. Juju Lewis. He's a quarterback out of Carrollton, Georgia. Five-star. Potentially the number one. Could be the number one quarterback in the class of 2025. We'll see. Bryce Underwood, previously mentioned, aforementioned Bryce Underwood, currently hold that. But this is a big time player. Everyone wants him. He committed to USC a while ago. That recruitment is very much that commitment is, in the alimony stage yet, but it's certainly a little shaky. He's taking visits. Colorado and Coach Prime are all over him, basically ready to hand him the keys to the Shador Sanders crib if he wants it to come right in. So there's a lot of speculation there, but a very interesting thing. He just announced he is going to take a visit. Auburn is also involved. But these are understandable. He is going to take a visit at the end of the month, supposedly. And I know we're talking recruiting visits, but whatever. To Indiana. The Hoosiers are getting a visit. And from Juju Lewis. And that is supposedly it. Kirk Cignetti is the new head coach there. Just got hired from James Madison, where he did extensively good work, going 11-1 last year. There's a lot of credit going to one of the offense coordinators, Tino Sunseri, who was a quarterback at Pitt back in the day. You remember him? and good quarterback. He worked at Alabama as a grad assistant, and Juju showed up at a camp as like, whatever, like 10. And he was all over him then or something. So he's kind of stuck with him along the way. So maybe he's getting the visit. But I don't really care. I don't really care what the chances of Indiana is. A legit five-star with in a middle of a massive like SEC school, Coach Prime, USC recruiting triangle, and Indiana's popping in there. Is this the greatest football recruit to ever visit Indiana? I don't like what is how excited are we?
Without question, that's wild. And yes, maybe it is a Tino Sinceri thing, and maybe it is relationships. Maybe it's a favor, you know, hey, we're going to help you out, but I'm not really going to go to school there. Or, like, Mark Cuban is now starting to whip out the collective money, or somebody like that. Mark Cuban's an IU grad. You know, they've got, obviously, like many other places, some incredibly rich people. Maybe they've tapped into somebody there. I will tell you this. Indiana is killing it in the basketball portal. So they've got some stuff going on in terms of player attraction in that sport. They probably do. Maybe could get some of those same people to chip in football too. But that, like, Indiana football historically is as irrelevant as almost humanly possible for somebody that's been in a power conference forever. You know, 1967 Rose Bowl. Been a while. So if this comes to pass, holy moly.
We got that Big Ten money coming. Big Ten TV money coming, man. Yeah, Big Ten TV money coming. CFP money coming.
Big Ten, you know, Big Ten, maybe, Big Ten. They're going to be chanting it in Columbus and Ann Arbor.
Maybe the Hoosiers are already earmarking some of that, as many schools are.
I mean, Cignetti comes into Indiana, takes his job out of James Madison, and he goes to the basketball game, and he doesn't just call out, like, we're going to beat Purdue. He's calling out Ohio State.
Oh, yeah, no, he started talking noise unbelievably right away.
Like, they're swinging for the fences, man. I don't know. I don't know if he's going to – I have no idea what's going to happen. But I'm just amazed. I was like, wait a minute, really? Then I'm, like, looking, and I'm like, does he, like, transfer to, like, Bloomington South for some reason? So I'm like, what? Why? What's there, like, now he's living with, like, there's a family tie. I'm like, what is happening?
Yeah,
Indiana. Who's your daddy? Get in there.
That's an extreme outlier. We're going to
see it. We're going to see it.
I tell you what, Dan – not on my bingo card for our pod discussion for May 12th, even though it's May 12th, was Indiana football recruiting. But here we are.
First time ever anybody's talked about Indiana recruiting in May.
Punch that box in that bingo card.
That's right. That's like the only thing people usually in Indiana are talking about right now is either the Pacers or like who's going to get the pole position at the 500.
I'll give you one more, a commitment. This is not Big Ten, but the Midwest. It's just, it's on fire. We'll go back to Toledo. They got a commitment.
Bo Polston.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Who is, some guys got him 3 stars, some got him 4. Indiana was interested. They offered him. Virginia Tech offered him. He's got offers from Georgia. That's probably not a non-committable offer, but whatever. But Minnesota, Washington, West Virginia, he had just heard from Michigan, apparently. He picked Toledo and claims he's 1,000% committed. He picked the Toledo Rockets to play in the MAC over all these other offers. He picked them early. Now, we will see when this holds out.
Yeah, we'll see if 1,000% is still 1,000%.
But this is his theory. Choose quality over quantity, he said. This is told the Indianapolis Star. I like this kid. He's already throwing out. That's the biggest advice I can give, because you want to get advice from
from somebody who's not yet in his senior year of high school.
He's wise beyond his years. You don't want to be holding the helmet. You want to be wearing the helmet. This dude is deep.
Oh, good line.
Don't chase the logo. Hey, I know I had some bigger offers, but you should find the perfect fit. That's what I did. He's also basically saying the chances to play are more important to sitting. And if you can start at Toledo and you do well, then you're going to get all the money you want later on.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
You use it, you know, going in, that you're probably not going to be there all 4 years. And I'm not talking about going to the NFL right after year three. It's going to the next step up. Cause the group of fives, they're turning into the farm system, as many predicted would happen in this world, that the immediate transfer in IO.
Well, maybe
world.
It's landing them being the farm systems, landing them some number, like.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes you can, I coach in the Power Four tell me this is kind of easy for him to say because he's not in the group of five, but he did say he believes that group of five coaches would excel more, would have more success if they did recruit to that. Hey, come here. We know you might leave after year one or two, but we'll develop you, treat it as a junior college, and then we'll promote you on. And I remember the coach specifically saying these group of five schools should use that in marketing and recruiting. Hey, come here. Look what we've done to previous recruit. Look where our previous signees are. They're playing at Oregon and Alabama and Ohio State and all that. It's certainly an interesting thought.
I think Trent Dilfer at UAB was saying that too. Yeah, but go ahead.
I think he did. Yeah.
But that, look, I mean, we're offering playing time. We're offering you an opportunity. See how good you are. Hey, if you're good enough to move up, Godspeed.
I don't know what Jason Candle is offered, obviously, or what his pitch was, but that certainly would make a lot of sense as it. I mean, look, they're 65-35 in the last eight seasons. They made seven bowl games. They've had 10 NFL picks. They're 11-3 last year. And so you come in and you go, hey, come play here. It's, if you start earlier, you're going to have your chance. You're not committing anywhere for 4 years necessarily. So I don't know. Pretty interesting. All right. We got Toledo recruiting. You really didn't have on your bucket list.
Oh man. I mean, that bingo card is lighting up tonight.
Well,
Dan,
we got a quick people's court here to get out of here.
Okay.
All right.
Cold Stone Creamery. Cold Stone Creamery, the ice cream thing. I think they have a super cold, almost like a flat top. It's like the
marble,
is it a marble slab? Something, yeah.
And
they mix it up there. Yeah. Well, they got their ass sued. They got their ass sued. Cold Stone Creamery.
Yeah. As all do.
Old Cold Stone Creamery.
The cold stone no, wasn't cold enough?
It is cold enough. A woman from Levittown, Long Island, is suing because she went and ordered pistachio ice cream at the Cold Stone Creamery. And she claims there are no pistachios in the ingredient. Mm-hmm. She alleges, and this is apparently per their ice cream shop's website, instead of pistachio, the ice cream has pistachio flavoring made up of, and this is going to terrify you, water, ethanol. I wonder what that's all about. Propylene, glycol, natural and artificial flavor. It's nice they have both. Yellow 5. Don't know what that is. And blue 1.
Mm.
Yellow and blue do make kind of green, so right? I know that much.
The one thing not in there is pistachios.
Per the lawyers, had she known that the product did not contain pistachio, she would not have purchased it or would have paid significantly less for it. This is according to the court filings. The judge here is already having fun. He said he can move forward. He wrote that the delightful dispute raises the deceptively complex question about the reasonable expectations for those ordering pistachio ice cream. Should consumers ordering pistachio ice cream at one of the defendant's establishments expect that product will contain actual pistachios? And if the answer is no, should that leave them with a bitter aftertaste? He's this guy. I like it. He's really into this.
He is into it. He wasted a lot of time.
He's kind of excited. New York Post, credit to the New York Post, Brooke Steinberg. Her lead in this story is pistachio.
That is put that extremely one, New put York that one Post.
On the work wall, there. Brooke.
Yeah. I don't know how much they're suing
That's
for.
The New York Post.
She surveyed the lawyer surveyed more than 400 consumers, and 85% of consumers believed that ice cream labeled pistachio would contain pistachios. So, Justice Dellinger, we'll start with you. A case here?
Yeah, no, I think so. I'd rather that rundown of what is made to flavor the ice cream like pistachio. I'd like pistachio to be in that list instead of, you know, yellow 5 and blue 1 and ethanol. So yeah, there's got to be pistachio in the pistachio ice cream. How hard is it to grind up pistachios and swirl it into milk, cream, and make ice cream? It doesn't seem that it's that difficult. Come on, Cold Stone.
I, too, would like ice cream without ethanol. But here's the dodge. Maybe, I guess. I don't know. Like, if they roll everything out on that stone, you got to then, you know, you roll out your pistachio ice cream, and if it has nuts in it, then you've got the nut allergy threat. And the next thing you're rolling out there, you might get nut allergy in there. And you know, like you get on a plane and they'll say, if anybody comes within 75 yards of a bag of peanuts, they're going to die. And so we can't have nuts on the plane. I mean, there's your out. And it's not that, you know, pistachios are actually expensive and we'd rather give you ethanol instead. You just say, look, nut allergy. We get nuts on our Cold Stone and then we're killing people left and right. And so we can't do it. Sorry. Take your ethanol and go.
So,
case dismissed.
Case dismissed. All right. So I say move forward. If it says pistachio, you have a right to think there's a pistachio. I'm trying to figure out why ethanol is in this stuff. So I'm looking at the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Trade Bureau, a department of the U.S. Treasury. And they have a list of this. They say it helps flavor syrups and sauces because it's like a sugar. It's also in gas. I don't really know. Others say that it kind of can become an alcohol and that helps the ice cream stay colder. I don't know, though. Either way, I'm very concerned. Yeah,
I'm concerned
about
this.
Not very really in favor.
Cold Stone Creamery's got an entire ingredient statement page. It's a little terrifying.
A lot of yellow 5s.
There's a lot of them. Like, I'm going to look up vanilla ice cream.
A lot of that stuff is in like the yellow 5, blue 1. I feel like a lot of that stuff is in bags of chips. Certain bags of like flavored chips you can find on the back. A lot of that. Maybe some sodas, you know.
Yeah, I naively thought that
doesn't
like
seem healthy.
Chocolate ice cream would be like cream, sugar, chocolate.
Oh yeah, no, Dan. No. Oh no.
Blue 4.
Yeah, no.
Orange 2.
Didn't have guar gum, polysorbate 80. Yeah.
There you go.
Caragian. That sounds like car. I don't know. Anyway, careful. Keep your head on a swivel at Cold Stone.
Yeah.
We will keep monitoring this lawsuit. I say free pistachios. I'm on the side of this. Big ice cream trying to screw us. All right, that's our show. We did it Mother's Day night, so you guys, because we knew we couldn't do it tomorrow morning. And our dedication to you guys, we knew the enthusiasts, the devotees of the College Football Inquirer could not wait until Tuesday for the riveting conversation that you just heard. That's right. Why you should tell your friends to listen to us.
Where else are you going to get Indiana, Toledo, and ethanol?
Toledo got like three different like references in one episode. Amazing. We should be huge in Toledo. Dave Briggs, let's go. Let's go.
Yeah, make it happen. You and Kyle Rowland.
All right. We'll talk to you. We'll be back later this week. Talk to you later.